Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
High atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Muammar Gaddafi is dead. Portland is ranked the second angriest city in the United States.
Shut your mouth about that.
And Ohio police kill all the zoo animals except for a monkey that was probably eaten by one of the other animals.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed. For this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, October 20th, 2011. Muammar Gaddafi is dead, according to Libya's interim government. We have been waiting for this moment for a long time. Muammar Gaddafi has been killed, said Prime Minister Mahmoud Jibril at a Tripoli news conference.
The next round is on me.
Huzzah, he said in whatever language they speak in Libya. Gaddafi is said to have died of wounds suffered during his capture near his hometown of Sirte, his final remaining stronghold in the nation that he ruled with an iron fist for more than four decades. News of Gaddafi's death first began to trickle in earlier Thursday, with conflicting reports surfacing about whether Libya's former leader had been killed or merely captured. It was not immediately clear exactly when Gaddafi's injuries occurred or what role NATO played in the attack that appears to have led to his death. One NTC official, Abdelmajid Malegga, told Reuters that Gaddafi had been wounded in both legs as he attempted to flee Sirte in a convoy that had been attacked at dawn by NATO warplanes. There was a lot of firing against his group and he died, Malegga told Reuters.
Okay.
Second NTC official.
Put the finer point on those details.
Yes, yes. This news was shared with me by my husband, by the way, this morning, who heard about it before I did, and he said, "Hey, they killed Muammar Gaddafi." And I said, "Oh, really? So they found him?" He goes, "Yeah, I guess he was at home." And so I hadn't read the news yet. So
of like, all the places.
So really, so they just figured that would be that's the last place they'll look for me in my stronghold.
Wait a minute, has anybody gone by his house? Well, damn it. Well, Ted, go by his house. See if he's there. Shoot him if he's
who
there.
Who is it? Pizza for Mr. Gaddafi. Oh, we're okay. No, Muammar, don't open the door.
You see a guy going, wait, I told you to check his house last week.
Yeah.
Oh, demerits for everyone.
Gaddafi's apparent death made headlines across the world, but Western media outlets were initially quick to caution that they had yet to independently confirm either Gaddafi's death or capture, but the coverage's tone later changed as additional reporting continued to roll in. A number of television outlets broadcast grainy digital video of what appeared to be Gaddafi's bloodied body, although it remains unclear if the footage was legitimate. Asked if there's a photographic evidence to prove that Gaddafi is indeed dead, Malegga told Reuters, "We have the footage, but it is not available now."
It'll be on pay-per-view later this month. Also available as a bonus on DVD Blu-ray. Is there a... are you quoting somebody named Malignant?
Malegta.
Was he created by J.K. Rowling just for this story?
He was in one of the Star Wars prequels.
Why, yes, Maligna. We will be taking Hogwarts later today. Yeah. Okay.
Melanta prosboctium. That's a spell I just made up.
Okay. Hello, everyone. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday, October 20th, 2011. That is Thursday, October 20th, 2011. Coming up later this hour, you got your Science on the March, also some entertainment news. Also, I believe I will have here in a moment, it's just coming across, as they say. I believe I'll have some sound from our leader, our glorious president, Don Barack Obama, about the death of, already forgotten, Muammar Gaddafi. That only took us 35 years, or however long it has been trying to kill that guy.
He is mopping up, though, isn't he? Say what you will about, like, the whole healthcare thing or the tax plan or whatever. He has Obama taking care of? He's got pirates. He's taking care of pirates.
And Osama bin Laden.
Osama bin Laden. Now we got Gaddafi.
Is he doing a thing, like, is he spray painting, like, another skull on the side of his truck? You know, somewhere to, hold on a second, I'm just upgrading my score. Shh. All right, who wants hoops? You know, and then just, you know, taking the rest of the week off. Yeah. Just, like, doing the, I mean, on the other, I suppose most people would probably rather have a job, but I mean, hey, whatever. You know, whatever you got, I guess we'll take it. Now, do we know that we killed him? I mean, we're happy to take credit.
They're saying that NATO.
Oh, that just means us.
That's us.
There's nobody else in NATO.
No.
It's just us and France, and what do they do?
No.
Nothing. So
they just provide the cheese.
That's all.
Yeah.
And bon mots, as we, you know.
Ha-ha! They say. Every time we kill someone, they go, ha-ha-ha! That's their job.
I'm trying to think of what joke you would even, let's see, like they do, the guy would like twirl his mustache and go, ha-ha, Muammar is no more, or something, or... Less. No, I got nothing.
No.
Less more.
Yeah.
No, there's a joke there.
That's
somewhere.
More of a CSI Miami thing. You need sunglasses for that. Muammar is no more.
Yeah. Wah! Maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Well, here's a story that was sent
not
in.
Not going to be obsessing on that for the rest of the hour, trying to see what would David Caruso do?
This is a story that was sent to us by our good friend Todd the Corpse. He said, I'm sure everybody sent you this, and strangely, no one had, so I'm reading it because it's in. Dateline Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. A welcome home party for a teenager released from juvenile detention resulted in gunshots and stab wounds for five people at the party.
Awesome.
The congratulations for getting out of juvenile detention party occurred in the 500 block of Hess Street in Bethlehem Saturday night. Reports of gunshots in that area brought police to find two people with stab wounds from a huge brawl that erupted on the street during the party. Police brought the two wounded to St. Luke's Hospital and later discovered that three more people were stabbed and had gone to the hospital on their own. Four adults and one 17-year-old juvenile were among the wounded. Five people were detained, including a woman suspected of firing a gun, but all were released. No charges were filed. Police told the Morning Call newspaper that the cause for the fight was unknown and the guest of honor was not among the wounded or detained.
So they're not really sure exactly where the gunfire came from or who caused it.
No, they just know that there was a brawl and a bunch of stabbing. So, and the guy who had just gotten out of juvie was not one of those people. So apparently he just needs to hang with a better class of people.
He needs to find a better circle of friends.
Although the party was probably given by his family, so he may just be doomed.
Maybe he's just, maybe it's an apple from a tree inside an orchard of very similar trees.
Yes.
On a hillside that is covered with similar orchards.
A forest of said trees.
Exactly. It's just like that. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Did I mention that coming up later in this hour is Science on the March? Huh? Did I mention that?
I think you might have.
It's the best moment of your life. So that's going to be coming up later on, about 20 minutes from now. And then following that, entertainment news coming up around 45 minutes after the hour, which will be about 37 minutes from now for those of you who are listening to this time-shifted or delayed. Next hour of the Rick Emerson radio program. Today, we got a Nazi watch coming up. Also, Mr. Mike Russell going to be in the studio with us around 2:30 or so, talking about Sabretooth Vampire Volume 2.
And a taser watch.
Just a little hint, Mike Russell, not the Nazi watch. Not to the best of your knowledge, anyway. All right. Here is Don Taylor.
A North Portland home was raided by police after officers were given a flyer found in the neighborhood that said heroin for sale and gave the home's address. Portland police officers and the Bureau's Special Emergency Reaction Team served a search warrant on the home in the 3900 block of North Massachusetts. Officers who raided the home found a small meth lab, 19 grams of marijuana, 10 grams of heroin, 190 pills, and $4,143 in cash. They also seized a shotgun. Police began looking into the house more than a year ago because of numerous neighborhood complaints. At one point, a neighbor gave police the heroin for sale flyer, which also had the address and names of the suspected drug dealers on it.
That does indicate that there may be heroin for sale somewhere in the neighborhood, and that they might be at this house being sold by these guys.
And so, therefore, the police looked into this for a year.
I guess, to be fair, I mean, I could just say that you just have a white slavery ring coming out of the basement of your house, but I guess they can't really kick in your door for that, I guess.
Well, I think a flyer that says, we are selling you heroin from this address, is probable cause.
Well, I don't think that's that. I think a judge would probably disagree with you.
Really?
I could put up a thing that says, for a good time, call, and then with your phone number, and I don't really know that it means that somebody could start putting your face on whorehouse flyers.
Yes, but it would...
It's not probable cause or the cops would have done it. Cops don't miss a chance to kick a door down. What are you talking about? If cops get a chance to go bust a skull, they're going to do it.
In addition, there were a number of public safety meetings where neighbors complained about the drug problem in their neighborhood, and they asked for something to be done, police said. When police raided the home Tuesday, there were 7 adults and 1 15-year-old in the home. 6 of the adults were arrested on various charges.
The reason it's not probable cause is because it's just hearsay. It's because it's just some guy. And you can't just do it because of some guy. That's why you just, you know, that's why you can't just, you know, the cops can't just kick in your door based on some anonymous tip that has no foundation.
Is that why
it's
legal to advertise for prostitution in, like, Willamette Week?
It's exactly why. What?
Well, I'm just trying to figure, if you're advertising the sale of something illegal.
Well, they're not advertising. You know the difference. You worked at newspapers. You know they're not actually advertising prostitution.
I know, but
in
this case, they're actually advertising heroin for sale. Those were the words they used.
Okay, let's just ratchet down just the invective just a little bit. I'm not saying it didn't turn out that they were guilty. I'm saying the cops have no way, there is no legal basis for knowing that they, in fact, put up the sign. Okay. I guess the point is, the reason it's hearsay is because anybody could have put up the sign, and it might have been false. Okay. It could have just been slanderous talk on the part of a neighbor who didn't like. Seriously, I got like half the people on my block hate half the other people on my block, and so it wouldn't surprise me, like, at any point, if there were just people hanging signs, like, left and right, if it was that easy to get a guy out of the neighborhood. I'd be doing it right now. I'd be accusing my neighbors of having killed Jesus. If I thought that it was, you know, if I could just get them, as they say, run out on a rail. When they say run out on a rail, does that just mean on a train?
Yeah, I think so. I think you'd actually make them, like, walk the tracks out of town.
Well, that's not running.
That's what I always, running, when you run someone out.
You're chasing them?
Maybe.
I don't understand.
You're giving them the bum's rush.
I don't know what that means either.
The bum's rush is when you grab somebody by the back of their collar.
Bums move very slowly.
The back of their collar and you... But the bum's rush is when you're kicking somebody, like, out of your bar or place of business. And you grab them by the back of their collar and, like, the back of their pants, like their belt, and you hoist them out the front door. That's the bum's rush.
I'm not sure that actually happens, ever, except like in dead-end kids movies.
Or Andy Cap.
When somebody's run out of town, no, he's never thrown out of any place. Not even his own home, where he routinely blackens the eyes of his wife. Mm-hmm. So when somebody's run out of town on a rail, just to clarify this before we move on, the rail is, in fact, the train tracks alongside which they are made to walk?
I've always assumed so. That's what it meant. You're running out of town on a rail. I don't know. Or is it when they give you, or does it go back to when they would give you a one-way ticket out of town and just make you leave and say, don't come back here again?
I don't know.
Which I've seen in, like, old westerns.
All right.
I don't know.
These are all... Clearly, we need to establish some sort of foundation to get to the bottom of these things.
Yes.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm, and you are richer for it, both intellectually and spiritually. Coming up later on this hour, yeah, you got your entertainment news and science on the March next hour of the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Taser Watch, Nazi Watch, and Mr. Mike Russell will all be part of that fine radio extravaganza. You can hear that at RickEmersonShow.com. That is RickEmersonShow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Well, yesterday we had the story of the 50-some exotic animals that were on the loose in Zanesville, Ohio, after the owner of the private zoo killed himself. Updates continued throughout the day. At one point on Wednesday afternoon, they figured out that only 2 of the roughly 50 exotic animals remained at large. They had police and other officials had taken to the streets and the roads and the woods and the whatnot and basically just killed everything. They shot everything they could shoot.
It was really their best day ever because everything just got to be like that Ride of the Valkyrie scene from Apocalypse Now where guys are hanging outside the the open doorways of Huey helicopters with belt-fed machine guns as they roared into Zanesville, getting ready to machine gun monkeys as far as the eye could see and the occasional panther.
Yeah, and I went from finding this story somewhat amusing to just being deeply, deeply depressed in the blink of an eye because, unfortunately, I saw the photo of them, like, all of the animals' dead bodies laid out after they'd shot them all, where they were, like, keeping count of them going, okay, we got all the tigers? And it was just so sad. And then all of a sudden, I just didn't find it amusing anymore. Then I just got deeply depressed, and I was like, I really wish I hadn't seen that picture.
Here's my thing. It's not like I'm for the machine gunning of lions as such in the abstract. Although I do have to say, how many animals were there?
There were 49.
I got to say, if at any point there's 49 wild animals, many of them, the kind that are equipped with all kinds of hurdy, pointy, ouchy, with the disemboweling of me type implements. I really hope that somebody comes and deals with that in a very, very strong fashion. That's really where I don't want them to just be stalking the thing with a tranquilizer gun for an hour and a half. I'm all for just nuking it.
Yeah, I completely understand why they did it. I wish there had been a better way. But I could see it, particularly if I lived there and I was going, I'm sorry, lions and bears and a baboon. Kill them! Kill them all!
I think the better way,
hiding nervously in my house.
The better way might be for it not to be legal to own, tigers in
no,
the first place.
They may be reassessing that rule, the laxity of those rules in Ohio
A hasty rewriting taking place.
So as I was all sad about this, then I found myself amused yet again when the news came out where they said they caught everybody, all of them, and killed all of them except for a grizzly bear, a mountain lion, and a monkey. Then it came out that they were only looking for the monkey, and the monkey had herpes. So then it was like, I kept seeing on Twitter and stuff where, they're searching for a monkey with herpes, and then this morning the news that they're no longer looking for the monkey because they're assuming it must have been eaten by one of the other animals, like one of the lions or the tigers or something.
Well, I don't even know where to go with that now. Now I'm just all, there's like four different directions we could take that.
I was deeply saddened by this whole story, and then I keep hearing the phrase monkey with herpes, and then I'm amused, and then I hate myself for being amused. And then I hear monkey with herpes again, and I just start giggling.
See,
and it was horrible.
Why I'm not deeply depressed by the whole story. I'm not happy that it's like, it ended with this jackass letting all of his creatures loose, and then, guys having to go out and do what guys have to do. Because you can't just be letting a lion just come into your house, because then they never leave, and they eat all the crackers.
And one thing that people aren't taking is the sheer number of them, because the actual body count, once they killed everything and counted them up, 18 Bengal tigers, 17 lions, as well as 6 black bears, 3 mountain lions, 2 grizzly bears, 2 wolves, and a baboon.
That's what I'm saying. It's not like it's a thing where you can just do the Marx Brothers thing of like one guy with a net going through town going, have you seen him? Like that's a thing where really the hammer has to be brought down. On the other hand, though, see, here's the thing. This is why I am the happy-go-lucky person that I am, and that I go through every day with a smile on my countenance and a spring in my step, because I view all the glasses as half full, Don. Because these animals, you know what they did? They lived, truly, before they died. I mean, really, what could be better if you're a lion than you're released into just this city of just Big Macs with legs?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, that
you
has got
to
be...
You get to menace something one last time.
It's like a supermarket sweep if you're an animal. You know what I mean? It's like that thing where they would just give you they give you a shopping cart in 60 seconds in the store on that game show, and you just get to go through the store for like a minute and a half, and you can just shove everything you want into your cart, and anything you manage to get into your cart, except in this case it's your mouth, you get to keep. I mean, and even if there's a guy who just shoots you in the skull as soon as you get outside, for that one glorious moment, you drank deeply from the cup of existence.
You're once again a feral beast of the wild.
I mean, as opposed to just living your whole life in a box in some dick's backyard, because you can't get a girlfriend. Which seems to be the case here. So, no, if it had to end, for the animals, I'd rather have it end this way. This seems like they went out living.
They did. Well, The Occupy Portland protest has given our city a new title, Daily Beast.
Thinkville.
The website.
Wait, hold on. Humptown.
No, second angriest city in the U.S.
Oh.
To get the score, they added up the number of protesters for the Tea Party protest in 2009 and the Occupy Portland protest going on right now, then divided to find the total per million residents. Denver made number one on the list. Seattle is third. So this is the number of protesters we have per million. And we came in number two behind Denver. Apparently, we have a population of 548,988. We had 1,000 Tea Party protesters. We've got 3,500 Occupy Wall Street protesters. That puts our total protesters per million at 8,197. So, and unlike in other cities, our encampment has not been removed by law enforcement nearly 2 weeks after they staked their ground. They also noted, noting why we are so noteworthy here, that one recent transplant from California, who also happens to be a sex offender, even registered the encampment with authorities as his local address.
Well, all that seems to undermine the assertion that we're an angry city. If everybody sort of, in other words, if there's no violence happening, if the cops aren't having to roust anybody out, and if in fact it's so peaceful that a sex offender is just willing to say, hey, I'm living here, and everybody's fine with a sex offender living there, it doesn't really seem...
But we are the protest is happening because people are angry. I think they're going... Yeah, I would say it would probably be dissatisfied with the government would be more...
We're generally peeved in a sort of amorphous kind of way. It seems like if it was truly anger, it'd be more entertaining for me. Because there'd be like tear gassing and clubbing and there'd be hitting with sticks and it hurts me. I'm just saying. We seem to be a largely sedentary city in that they kind of move downtown and then it's just easier to stay there than to go home. And so as a result, there they are, just sort of like some sort of mass of underwater sea sponges, just sort of... It's exactly like that.
What it is.
Underwater sea sponges.
Mm. Well, speaking of the Occupy Wall Street hoo-ha...
Yes, tell me about what's happening inside the hoo-ha of Occupy Wall Street.
Adbusters, the magazine that sparked the movement, is now trying to rally it around a single clear demand, a Robin Hood tax. The Vancouver-based magazine with an anti-consumerist bent is calling on its supporters to participate in a global march on October 29th. It has proposed a Twitter hashtag, Robin Hood, for the occasion, and has laid out a policy proposal, a 1% tax on all financial transactions and currency trades. The magazine's open letter reads in part, on October 29th, on the eve of the G20 Leaders Summit in France, let the people of the world rise up and demand that our G20 leaders immediately impose a 1% Robin Hood tax on all financial transactions and currency trades. Let's send them a clear message. We want you to slow down some of that $1.3 trillion easy money that's sloshing around the global casino each day. Enough cash to fund every social program and environmental initiative in the world.
At least they're being honest with it and just calling it theft.
Yeah. The form and content of the message echo that of the magazine's original July 13th call for an Occupy Wall Street demonstration. That open letter, which, like this one, was sent via email to an estimated 90,000 readers, asked, are you ready for a Tahrir moment? It went on September 17th, we want to see 20,000 people flood into lower Manhattan, set up tents, kitchens, peaceful barricades, and occupy Wall Street for a few months. Once there, we shall incessantly repeat one simple demand in a plurality of voices. That simple demand at the time... was democracy, not corporatocracy. That's not simple at all. That's not even easy to say.
That rolls off the tongue, let me tell you.
That's proven too vague for many critics who have repeatedly wondered just what the Occupy activists actually want. So,
So I'm unclear about, even now that they've said what they want,
A 1% tax on all financial transactions.
Does that mean if I lend you $10, you got to give me 1% interest?
That I don't know.
Okay. Long as they're specific about it.
No.
Okay.
Also, a freelance public radio personality has been fired from her job after NPR began looking into her role as a spokesperson for an offshoot of the Occupy Wall Street movement. The Associated Press reports that Lisa Simone said she was fired by phone on Wednesday by Soundprint, a radio documentary show that is not produced by NPR, but which airs on WAMU, an NPR affiliate in Washington, D.C. Simone is also host of The World of Opera, which is produced by public radio station WDAV and also airs on NPR.
Did she deliver her reports in a smoky voice, redolent with the sound of torch singing?
Very slow and Very calm.
Oh, no, it's Nina Simone.
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah. According to Simone, or Simeone, as her name is pronounced, she's got an extra E in there, NPR's code of ethics was read to her on the phone call. As quoted by Roll Call, the Capitol Hill publication that first noticed Simone at the protests earlier this week, NPR's code of ethics states, NPR journalists may not engage in public relations work, paid or unpaid. Exceptions may be for certain volunteer nonprofit, nonpartisan activities, such as participating in the work of a church, synagogue, or other institution of worship, or a charitable organization, so long as this would not conflict with the interests of NPR in reporting on activities related to that institution or organization. In an interview with the Baltimore Sun, Simone expressed her frustration, saying, I find it puzzling NPR objects to my exercising my rights as an American citizen, the right to free speech, the right to peaceful assembly, on my own time, in my own life. But also, media blog Pointer notes that her actions may have a broader, loaded political context, and the criticism of her work may have more to do with NPR than with her. Said questions about politics have dogged NPR in the last year, and the public radio network's new CEO hopes to depoliticize its image. So
by depoliticizing its image, it will then appeal to no one.
It's like, no, we're not liberal. We just like opera and cooking. And Rick Steves.
That's exactly what their approach is going to be. We just like opera. All right. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget, if you want to get this program later on the day in its entirety, you can do so. You can do so by getting it via iTunes or by downloading the MP3 directly here at Cascadia.fm or over at LegionofNews.com. You can also take it with you on your mobile device if you like. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm. Don't forget, coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. Today we'll have a Nazi watch, also a taser watch, and Mr. Mike Russell going to be joining us in the studio today around 2:30 or so to talk about Sabretooth Vampire Volume 2, which he will be selling and autographing tomorrow. And it's Friday the 21st at Bridge City Comics from 6 to 9 p.m. He'll be flanked slash joined slash augmented by Mr. Aaron Duran. We'll be there with Labraheria. Every time I say it now, I'm trying to like vague it up even more so I can please everybody who's given me an alternate pronunciation.
Well, he himself says La Brujia, so do it his way.
Yeah, but I mean,
I don't think he's right, but it's his comic, so he can say it however he wants.
All right. Well, as his people say, La Brujia, Volume 2. That'll be tomorrow, Bridge City Comics, 6 to 9 p.m. at Mississippi Studios. Or I'm sorry, not Mississippi Studios, but on Mississippi Bridge City Comics near Mississippi Studios. You can find out more at geekinthecity.com or culturepulp.com. Here is Don Taylor.
It's time for science.
Here's your science on the march for Thursday, October 20th, 2011. Today is a special treat. Here's the actual science on the march bed.
Wow. It was only last month that the world nervously waited for NASA's Upper Atmosphere Research Satellite, URS, to enter the atmosphere in an unknown location. Any surviving pieces of URS splashed down safely in the Pacific Ocean on September 24th. Although URS was a bigger chunk of space debris, it turns out the odds are higher of ROSAT's re-entry. Which is yet another satellite.
Is that a thing where I get all blotchy and red?
Yes.
Okay.
And if it hits you, you will be very itchy. It's re-entry debris giving somebody a very bad day. There is a 1 in 2,000 chance that satellite debris could hit a person on the planet. UR's odds were less at 1 in 3,200. ROSAT is a different satellite than UR's, very different. Rather than analyzing the atmosphere, ROSAT was designed to catalog X-ray sources in deep space. The space telescope mapped around 110,000 stars and supernovae. It also made the surprise discovery that comets emit X-rays, too. ROSAT will break up on re-entry, and German Space Agency engineers think around 30 pieces will hit the ground, raining down over a 50-mile-long path. The largest chunk expected to survive the fall is ROSAT's 32-inch-wide, 880-pound high-temperature mirror. The odds of causing death and mayhem are very low, but the mirror will be of the greatest concern.
Okay, now you forgot to, one of your sentences is incomplete there. Raining down a fiery hell of doom and destruction.
Oh, yeah, ROSAT is slowly succumbing to the drag caused by the Earth's upper atmosphere and dropping in altitude. According to the German Aerospace Center, sometime between October 21st and October 25th, it will drop to a 74 to 68 mile orbit, and when it reaches that altitude, it will tumble out of control at a speed of 17,000 miles per hour.
Not unlike Chevy Chase.
With his usual flair, British billionaire Richard Branson rappelled from a balcony, shook up a big bottle of champagne, and took a swig while christening the world's first built-from-scratch commercial spaceport on Monday. Branson's Virgin Galactic will stage its commercial space tourism venture from Spaceport America in a remote patch of desert in southern New Mexico. Branson was joined by Governor Susana Martinez, astronaut Buzz Aldrin, and scores of would-be space travelers at a terminal hangar for the dedication. It had been nearly a year since Branson was in New Mexico to celebrate the completion of the runway.
I think the Buzz Aldrin thing should be he has to punch somebody everywhere he goes. That should be his calling card. You know, like you pay like an extra $2 or something, and you get to see him just slug a guy in the face.
Or he'll slug you.
Yeah, I would totally do that if I could get Buzz Aldrin to punch me. I'd pay for that, because I mean, really, there's a handful of people on Earth, and not many more who can say that.
That's right. With the spaceport and mothership completed, the company is now finalizing its rocket tests. We're ticking the final boxes on the way to space, Branson said.
I don't think he understands how you really get to space.
He hopes enough powered test flights of Virgin Galactic's sleek spacecraft can be done by the end of 2012 to start commercial suborbital flights from the spaceport soon after. More than 450 people have purchased tickets to fly with Virgin Galactic. About 150 of them attended the ceremony. Before getting to enter the hangar, the crowd was treated to a flyover by White Knight 2, the mothership that one day will take space tourists on suborbital flights.
Let me ask you right now, is any portion of this story true? This all sounds like a complete and total fabrication. Not so much on your part as people would expect, but on the part of Branson himself.
No, it sounds like an episode of The Simpsons, starting with him rappelling from a balcony and shaking up a bottle of champagne and then drinking out of it.
It really does.
To, like, his mothership coming over and hovering above so people could take a look at it.
There's Spaceport something or other?
Spaceport America.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So commercial service will start after the company gets a license from the FAA. NASA has already signed a $4.5 million contract with the company for up to 3 chartered research flights.
All right. By the way, the other guy who's working on sort of entry-level space flight is that guy that runs the Tesla Motor Company at this point, who's scary smart and the thing is, you can tell he's really smart because he has that peculiar detachment where he doesn't really seem to understand how human beings talk to each other. I heard him interviewed on Science Friday, and they were talking about this, like, because the whole quest for these guys, one of the big challenges has been to develop a returnable, restorable, reusable rocket, because all the rockets we use now are essentially one time. All of the, you know, the boosters, that whole thing, they fall away and then they either disintegrate or they burn on re-entry or whatever. And so the whole thing for the Tesla company, they've been trying to develop this reusable rocket. And they, so Ira Flatow's talking to me, goes, well, so what happens if when we get ready to launch into space, if maybe, you know, this is an inexact science and there may be, you know, sometimes there are deaths in the space program. What if, as with happened with some of the Apollo missions, there's a loss of life? How will that impact the program moving forward? And the guy's so great. And I just picture him looking just a little bit like Alan Rickman, but sort of in a lab coat. And he says, well, we'd like to think that we wouldn't be slowed down by any such issue. I mean, obviously, any loss of life would be that would cause a momentary hitch in the forward progress of the probe. But, we'd be able to clean things up and get rolling again in a very short time. And it was just, like, said with this absolute, like, sort of, like, Kraftworkian kind of detachment that was awesome.
I was ever so briefly connected to his wife. We used to read each other's blogs on LiveJournal. And his now ex-wife. Because that's what you do. The richer and the more famous you get. You jettison the first wife, get another wife.
And go into space.
That's right. But it was one of those things where most days it was like, oh, I'm working on my book, because she's a young adult author, and I'm taking care of my kids. And she seemed like a perfectly normal person. But then there would be these glimpses that her life was not like my life, like talking about her husband and how Robert Downey Jr. was following him around for a few days to do research to play Tony Stark in Iron Man.
That's odd.
And also that they lived next door to Joe Francis, the Girls Gone Wild guy. And he invited them down to Mexico to go on vacation at his Mexico house for like a week.
Normally, if you're living next to Joe Francis, it means you're in solitary confinement.
Well, yeah. Well, she was living next to him the very first time he got arrested. And it was weird because she would talk about, like, getting... She never mentioned him by name, but she told him, our notorious neighbor. and talked about like him calling her from jail and saying, I'm okay. I'm a little depressed, but things are okay.
You feed the cats.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Don't forget, you can summon this program to your Jobsian communication device later on the day if you would like via iTunes, or you can download it directly as an MP3 right here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com.
And finally, what does it say, Rick Emerson, about a person when they have hundreds of Facebook friends? What does it say?
That they are... No, I don't know.
Well, for one thing, new findings suggest that it says they might have a highly developed right superior temporal sulcus. A study published Wednesday in the journal Proceedings of the Royal Society B found that the more connections someone has on social networking sites, the denser the gray matter in several specific brain regions linked to social cognition.
Your mom's got dense gray matter.
It remains to be seen whether adding Facebook friends causes the increase in gray matter or vice versa.
Okay, but this story is useless without an explanation in actual human terms.
Well, one of the researchers told Reuters, the exciting question now is whether these structures change over time. This will help us answer the question of whether the internet is changing our brains.
Not helping.
The research team asked 165 college-age volunteers how many Facebook friends and real-world friends they had, then performed MRI scans on their brains. Both Facebook friends and real-world friends correlated with higher gray matter density in one part of the brain. Which part, Rick Emerson?
The sulcus?
The amygdala.
Okay.
The amygdala.
Well, what was the sulcus thing you mentioned earlier?
Well, that's
a sultan of some kind.
The right superior temporal sulcus, I believe, is... it's in the same general neighborhood as the amygdala.
Okay.
I don't know.
I guess what I'm saying is, what does that mean if you have denser gray matter in terms attitudinally or behaviorally?
I think that's what they're trying to figure out. So far, I think it just seems coincidental. Three other parts of the brain were denser. Here's the problem. The more friends you have, both real world and Facebook friends, it seems like the denser the amygdala. But three other parts of the brain were denser only in those with more online friends, suggesting some differences in the neurological basis of real-world and online interactions. As an Oxford professor not involved in the research cautioned, the study doesn't mean Facebook is a shortcut to making people smarter. He said, if you got yourself 100 new Facebook friends today, then your brain would not be bigger tomorrow. The study cannot tell us whether using the internet is good or bad for
our
brain.
This is why it sucks to be a scientist, because you have to, doing some just like mind-breakingly difficult or complex or nuanced research, and at the end of it, because there's going to be some jag-off from, you know, from Channel 9 sticking a microphone in your face, you have to go, no, it doesn't, no, it doesn't mean that adding Facebook friends make you smarter. No, that's not what I said. Oh, Christ. And then that's why you just want to go hang out with the Tesla guy and just not have it, like, and not speak to people.
And no matter what the guy says, like, the next day, it's going to be on...
Can adding Facebook friends give you a bigger brain? The answer may surprise you. And then the guy's at home just going, oh, give me some more Jack Daniels. Stupid science.
And that is all of our science for today.
Hurrah! There's your Science on the March for Thursday, October 20th, 2011. You've got like a whirlwind of paper happening over there.
I do. I have so many things. There's so much news everywhere.
Too many things. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program with Mr. Mike Russell joining us later on today.
Stack over here.
Also a Taser watch, a Nazi watch, and just a big pile of ill-defined stories and happenings over there on the floor next to Don.
Yes. Okay. Oh, so much. All right.
Take all the time you need.
Okay. Not good. I wanted to find the story because I didn't read it yesterday. A San Francisco man will be arraigned Tuesday on charges that he attacked his brother with a cordless power drill during an argument over a busted door lock last weekend. Kevin Guerin, 57, who was already facing felony charges in connection to an alleged hate crime assault on October 4th, failed in his attempt to drill into his brother's forehead because the drill bit fell off during the attack. Instead, Guerin allegedly then bashed his brother over the head with the drill before letting him go free around 9 a.m. The attack occurred in the bedroom of their home, which is in the Sunnyside neighborhood of San Francisco. The cop who responded to the fight found the victim's blood in front of the home. The officer learned the beaten brother had fled to a neighbor's house and called police. Before being transported to the hospital, the victim told the officer that Guerin became enraged at him during an argument about a broken lock on the bathroom door.
Wait, so they're brothers, you said?
Yes.
So they only got the one bedroom? You said the bedroom of their home.
That's what it says, in the bedroom.
Well, that would go a long way toward explaining the irritation if there's only one bedroom.
The victim had apparently asked Guerin not to remove a piece of tape on the bathroom lock, but Guerin did not heed the request, and they argued. The victim then decided he might as well fix the lock, so he fetched an electric drill. Guerin somehow became angry that his brother was going to fix the lock. He grabbed the drill from his brother, pushed him into the master bedroom, forced him on a bed, and screamed, "I'm going to kill you!" He squeezed the trigger of the drill, and the bit began to spin. The victim struggled as the suspect attempted to put the drill closer to his face and head. Rather fortunately, the bit then fell out of the drill, so Guerin then just hit his brother on the head with it.
So he just decided to go the straight bludgeon route.
Yes. So the brother here is being charged with four felony counts, including assault with a deadly weapon. So
it seems like if he didn't... Well, first of all, I'm unclear about what kind of drill he had. Because if he was actually going to be...
Electric drill?
Right, but if he's going to be putting the screw in, that means he's not... He doesn't have a drill bit in, actually. He's just got, like, a screwdriver bit in. Which means you probably wouldn't have been successful anyway. Like, it would have just... Like, the most it would have gone, like, ow, ow, ow. Sort of a, ow, it's cutting me a little bit in the head.
Probably.
That would have, I mean...
If it was a Phillips head, you might be able to, like, you know, and you pushed hard enough.
You get a good gouge on, maybe.
Yeah.
But it seems like this is almost certainly going to be turned into some sort of scene in a Farrelly Brothers film. Like, those guys, they must just flag stories like this and then just decide to work them into the future screenplays. Also, I don't understand why they had tape on the door anyway, because it seems like the only purpose there is to sort of keep the thing from closing all the way, which is counterintuitive to a bathroom door and whatever. But, you know, hey, who am I to judge? I will say that this is... Really, there are fewer things, especially if you were living in close quarters with somebody. I mean, God forbid it's also a sibling, because then that's just like exponential layers of annoyance that happen. It just crop up every day, like so many gypsy moths in the tree of life. But the whole thing about putting the tape on the door, that resonates with me, because it's like if you have a roommate, here's something you can never do, by the way, if you live with me. Just FYI, for people who are considering cohabitating with me, Rick Emerson, here's the thing. If I ever... For the love of God, seriously, if you ever do that thing of just taking the new roll of toilet paper and just sticking it on the back of the toilet, I will kill you in your sleep. I seriously, and the thing is, and I'm going to kill you slowly, but first I'm just going to cut out and cauterize your larynx so you can't scream for help. And then but then the rest of the death will take, you know, I would imagine the better part of a month, really, to whatever degree that's possible. Just throw the goddamn tube away and put the new toilet paper on the goddamn little plunger thing
that
goes in there.
It's not that hard.
Seriously. And for the love of Christ, and it's one thing. Here's the other thing. Let me just say this about that. Not only do you get these dicks that will live with you, because I've had roommates that did this. I've had girlfriends that did this. Someone who is similar to, but for the purposes of this conversation, legally distinct from my wife, does this occasionally. Although that's a lesson that she's learning the hard way. Anyway, it's one thing if you just finish the toilet paper and then you have the empty cardboard tube sitting there and you're like, well, and then at the last moment you realize, wait a minute, nothing for the paperwork. And then you reach underneath, you get the toilet paper, and then maybe, you know, you're taking care of your business and then you stick it there and you forget that's bad enough. What's even worse, though, is you get these jagoffs who, and my grandmother used to do this, one of the many reasons why she was a horrible person and God punished her with cancer. In the ass, by the way. It's the worst of the cancers. And it was largely because she did this thing with the toilet paper where she was to toilet paper usage as like my younger brother was growing up to milk usage, where she would just leave like 5 sheets on the roll and then get a new roll out and put it on the back of the toilet and use that constantly. And so you would have this roll that wasn't quite finished on the plunger, and then you'd have this roll on the back of the toilet that is slowly being used, because that's the one she would just do.
That doesn't make any sense at all.
No, it doesn't. It does not, but I got to tell you, in a studio similar to but legally distinct from our own, there was a bathroom down the hallway in which that was done last week, where I noticed that there was like, I don't know, maybe a quarter of an inch, you know, like thickness of toilet paper left on the roll, and yet on the back of the toilet, on the tank, was another roll that somebody had brought out that was then decreasing in size over the course of like a day or two because people were just using that one.
Yeah.
For the love of God. We have a civilization.
I noticed that was happening, and I thought about putting the toilet paper on the roll, but I honestly find myself in that position where I am so often the person that puts the toilet paper on the damn roll in this place, because it will get down literally to there's nothing. There's like a half an inch of paper on the thing, and the person just leaves and doesn't replace it. And I'm so tired of being the one to do it that when that happened, somebody had gotten the toilet paper and just put it on the counter or whatever. And I'm looking over at the roller thing and looking at the toilet, and I'm like, I'm not going to do it. That's it. I am not doing it this time.
Oh, no.
I just put my foot down and just said, no, never again.
No, and I'll do it. Don't let's have no illusions about that. It's not like I can't be passively shoved into changing the toilet paper roll. I can, and I am, often. But also, let's have no illusions about this. I'm remembering all those incidents. They are being filed away in my brain. There's going to come a time when those particular chickens come home to roost. In your ass. There we go.
Oh, and ass chickens are the worst kind of chickens.
Little callback there to the cancer joke from earlier.
Exactly. Authorities say a Minnesota man has been arrested in the theft of several hundred feeder pigs from producers in Mitchell County in northern Iowa. The Globe
Northern where?
Iowa. I want to say Iowa.
Okay.
But it kind of, something happened to my mouth. The Globe Gazette in Mason City says John Arndt of Hayfield, Minnesota, was taken into custody on Tuesday in Minnesota. He faces several charges, including ongoing criminal conduct and first-degree theft. He's being held on $47,000 bond. Mitchell County Deputy Greg Beaver says the pigs were stolen over several months from November 2010 to September and sold at livestock auctions. Although he couldn't provide how much the livestock was worth, he said it was at least $10,000. A roadside interview with the passengers of a suspicious vehicle in September eventually led to the arrest. It isn't known if Arndt is also a suspect in similar thefts in Minnesota. So apparently pig wrestling is going on
it's
in Iowa.
Thing.
Is a thing in Iowa.
Okay. Seems like you couldn't really do that without drawing attention to yourself. There should be some noise and some squealing and some... I mean, cattle rustling is a thing where you drive them across the plains away from, like, you know, like the Jenkins farm, away from the rocking K and over to your place, the Crazy H. Pig rustling, I mean, how fast can a pig go, first of all?
Well, maybe that's why it was a suspicious vehicle thing. Excuse me, sir, you seem to have a station wagon filled with pigs.
See, that's not rustling, that's just stealing.
Oh.
Rustling sort of is, you know, rustling at least takes some work.
So rustling, it's all got to be, like, on the ground. They have to leave of their own...
wasn't that cattle rustling? Like, cattle rustling wasn't like they put them in a station wagon.
Well, they didn't have station wagons.
Ah.
I'll bet if you just pulled up with a big semi-truck and filled it full of cows that weren't your own, that would still count as cattle rustling.
The pupil becomes the teacher. Mm. Here's Don Taylor.
KGW viewers, people who watch that show, will get a chance to be one of the first fans to see the premiere episode of the NBC TV series Grimm. I don't know why I'm sharing this with you because KGW annoys me, but
let's not be mean to KGW.
Okay, the cop drama inspired by the Grimm fairy tales will first hit TV screens in October. There's going to be a premiere screening here in Portland on October 24th, starting at 8 p.m. I have no idea where it's going to be, but they're going to have one of these things. There is a website you can go to, gofobo.com, and enter a code KGWM6UB. That is KGWM6UB. And then there's a download thing, and you can download a pass and print a ticket. And so if there are still any available, you can get in on a first-come, first-served basis, which means that they're giving away a lot more of these than there are seats for, just like movie screenings.
You shouldn't be mean to the home of Stephanie Strickland.
No, and that's the thing, is they did mention that Grimm star Silas Weir Mitchell did talk live with Stephanie Strickland on Tuesday's edition of Live at 7, as you have yourself.
And
Stephanie Strickland is a very nice
woman.
She's
one of our favorite people in general. So.
She is terrific. So the writers of Grimm have worked on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Angel, X-Files. They're filming it here in Portland. So
yeah, that's David Greenwald, who's the guy behind that.
So you get a chance to see a bunch of local things, which people in Portland really love. Growing up in the Los Angeles area, I didn't realize like how much people like really enjoyed seeing their hometown on TV.
It's not that.
Because I always saw my hometown on TV.
See, but that is a misnomer when people say that. It's that we enjoy seeing some place that's not L.A. or New York.
Maybe that's it.
There are other cities in the world that are not Los Angeles or New York. And so we enjoy just the occasional idea that something interesting might happen in a place that isn't Los Angeles or Manhattan.
Well, I saw. I went to the screening of that god-awful Tommy Lee Jones movie that they shot here.
Oh, The Hunted?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was kind of sad because everyone was so proud of it before the movie started. The Oregon Film Commission people were there, and they were like, it's so great to work with everyone in Portland. And everyone was like, hooray, Portland, hooray. And watched the movie, and it became clear that the only joy to be gotten out of that movie was to go, hey, hey, look, Hawthorne Bridge.
Well, that's the other thing. The
Wait a minute. Oregon City is way downstream.
The other reason that people have become, people get really excited about seeing things from Portland in movies here is because that for so long there was just that Oregon curse where everything made here was bad.
Yeah.
You know, like when you go to see Body of Evidence with Madonna, really, what else is there? What other what other bright spots? What other high watermarks in that film are you really going to be pointing to?
Now we have this sort of interesting cachet where we've become the town that TV shows are set in, but they don't actually film them here.
Well, that's not true. That's only true for that was only true for Life Unexpected, I think.
No, it's not. There's also the show that just got canceled. The one with Hank Azaria. It's a sitcom.
I must have
Free Agents.
Blinked and missed that.
Free Agents, where he played a guy in a PR agency, and they just kept talking about how it's set in Portland.
Because there's at least two shows set here that are filmed here.
Okay.
So there's Grimm, and then there's whatever that other joint is from Dean Devlin.
Yeah,
and John Rogers.
And Leverage, which takes place everywhere, but is actually
Well, that's the
here.
Great thing. It's like where we have become like the sort of Vancouver South, where we are everything. We are Africa. Here's Don Taylor.
Oh, okay. Let's start our entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Thursday, October 20th, 2011.
Lindsay Lohan will be headed back to court again. During a hearing in Los Angeles on Wednesday, Judge Stephanie Soutner ordered the actress's probation revoked and ruled that her next hearing would be sent for November 2nd. Lohan was led away in handcuffs at the end of Wednesday's hearing, although a bondsman was also in court to bail her out, which delved into whether the actress was following through with her probation, which stems from a 2007 drunk driving charge. She was let go from her community service job at the Downtown Women's Center after failing to show up for scheduled appointments. Soutner ordered that Lohan now work at the L.A. County Morgue and refused to give Lohan credit for her time with the Red Cross.
Okay, that's hot. What is she going to be doing at the morgue?
I have no idea.
I didn't think it was possible that she could ever become alluring again, but I think we may have found the way.
The November 2nd hearing could determine whether or not Lohan returns to jail. She could face up to a year and a half in custody. Lohan's rep issued the following statement. Lindsay is hoping this matter will be resolved on November 2nd and the court will reinstate probation and allow her to continue fulfilling her community service.
I demand photos of Lindsay Lohan helping with an autopsy.
She's just going to be moving bodies back and forth from cooler to slab, I think.
Okay, that is like really... I mean, if I can't have Michelle Forbes doing it in real life, I'll take Lindsay Lohan.
French President Nicolas Sarkozy and his wife Carla Bruni Sarkozy...
That's where you keep your SAR when you're not using it.
Your Sarkozy. ...have welcomed their first child, according to Le Figaro. The baby girl named Baby Bernie Sarkozy... was born at the Clinique de la Mouette in Paris. Her name is not yet known. This is Sarkozy's fourth child. He has three others from previous marriages. Bruni Sarkozy has one other child. Their baby is the first born to a ruling French leader since Napoleon.
They just named it Baby...
Well, they haven't actually named it yet or told people what it's named. So they're just calling it Baby Bernie
That's
Sarkozy.
Like it's a placeholder name.
Yes.
It's like it's the picture in the frame.
Yeah.
Okay.
And just months after adopting her daughter, Amaya Josephine, Mariska Hargitay and her husband, Peter Herman, have another addition to the family, son Andrew Nicholas Hargitay Herman. We never in a million years thought it would happen this quickly, but something inside of us knew it was right, and we said, yes, 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 she said. They adopted another kid. I have no idea how it could happen so quickly for rich, famous people to get a baby.
It is strange how that works out.
Danny Masterson... has married his longtime girlfriend, almost famous actress Bijou Phillips. The pair, who got engaged in 2009, tied the knot Tuesday before an intimate group of family and friends in the Irish countryside. Notable guests at the wedding, which took place at a private castle.
Castle, really?
Castle.
What's up with you today?
I don't know.
Iror, castle?
I don't know. The words, they not come out so pretty. Include Mike Pena, Ben Foster, Ethan Suple, and the groom's brother, his best man, Malcolm in the Middle actor, Chris Masterson.
How is it that Ethan Suple somehow became some sort of a quasi-player in Hollywood?
I don't even know who he is.
Oh, yeah, you do. He's the huge guy from My Name is Earl.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's also a Scientologist.
Let's be honest. It's not like that just works out well for everybody. He's an even huger guy in American History X. He's the guy who's like
That's
the size
right.
of a planet driving the van.
Oh my God! I always wondered why I knew him.
He was in a bunch of Kevin Smith's films, and yeah, he's
okay.
He's basically a moon.
Samsung Electronics unveiled its newest Galaxy Nexus smartphone on Wednesday, the first to use the latest version of Google's Android operating system. At a glitzy unveiling in Hong Kong, Google executive Andy Rubin said Android's latest ice cream sandwich operating system.
It's hard to believe people don't take that seriously.
You know, the animals that Apple use are silly enough, but the whole candy and ice cream theme that Android came up with is just idiotic. Anyway, the new ice cream sandwich operating system demonstrates innovation that works on phones and tablets and everything in between. Rubin said features like Android Beam and Face Unlock showcased ice cream sandwich's capabilities. Android Beam allows transfer of data between two smartphones by holding them together. Never seen that before. And Face Unlock uses facial recognition technology to activate smartphones rather than conventional passwords.
Hold on. When I say phones and tablets and everything in between, what's in between?
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, so that happened. Zooey Deschanel has double duty for Fox. The star of the new series, New Girl, is also performing at the World Series. Deschanel is from the indie pop duo She and Him. She'll sing the national anthem at Game 4 of the Major League Baseball 7-game series between the St. Louis Cardinals and the Texas Rangers. It airs Sunday on Fox. Before the actress takes the stage, country singer Trace Adkins will perform the anthem at Game 2 on Thursday, and Ronnie Dunn will do the same 2 days later at Game 3. The Cardinals and Rangers battled it out Wednesday night in Game 1 at Busch Stadium in St. Louis, where American Idol champion Scotty McCreery will perform the national anthem.
Maybe Zooey Deschanel and that Moldy Peaches group from Juno can get together and have a precious off.
Oh.
Hey, is Ronnie...
He's so quirky.
Is Ronnie Dunn the one who looks like Allison Janney in drag?
I don't know. Is he half of Brooks and Dunn?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, because there's Kix Brooks and Ronnie Dunn, and I think it is Ronnie Dunn. He's the tall... Because there's the guy, he's sort of shorter. He looks like the old FedEx pitch man with the mustache. And then there's Ronnie Dunn, who I believe is the tall, slender one. The next time you look at Ronnie Dunn, imagine Allison Janney from The West Wing if you put, like, a really bad, crepe hair beard on
her. Yes! He looks like Allison Janney wearing a fake beard.
That's what I'm saying. Gave her, like, a Monty Python beard.
He also, in some shots, looks a little bit like Bruce Boxleitner.
Yeah. Yeah, take Allison Janney and give her one of those fake beards from Life of Brian.
Oh, wow.
That is, she's Ronnie Dunn
same
from Brooks
hair,
and Dunn.
Same hair, too. Exactly the same hair.
I'm telling you, it's like they're the same person.
Wow. And finally, in 3 decades as one of the world's biggest rock stars, Jon Bon Jovi has eaten in some of the world's best restaurants, savoring the best food the planet has to offer. Yet there's no place he'd rather dine than the Soul Kitchen, a pay-what-you-can restaurant he and his wife Dorothea established in a former auto body shop near the Red Bank train station in central New Jersey. The restaurant provides gourmet-quality meals to the hungry while enabling them to volunteer on community projects in return without the stigma of visiting a soup kitchen. Paying customers are encouraged to leave whatever they want in the envelopes on each table where the menus never list a price. The restaurant is the latest undertaking by Jon Bon Jovi and his Jon Bon Jovi Soul Foundation, which has built 260 homes for low-income residents in recent years. He said, with the economic downturn, one of the things I noticed was that disposable income was one of the first things that went. Dining out, the family going to a restaurant, mom not having to cook, dad not having to clean up. A lot of memories were made around restaurant tables. When I learned that 1 in 6 people in this country goes to bed hungry, I thought this was the next phase of the foundation's work. It took a year and $250,000, but apparently the restaurant is booming, with entrees like cornmeal crusted catfish with red beans and rice, grilled chicken breast with homemade basil mayo and rice pilaf, and grilled salmon with Soul seasonings, sweet potato mash, and sautéed greens.
Oh, that sounds really good.
They also grow many of the vegetables in their own urban vegetable garden.
I had this morning was some stale Tapatio-flavored Doritos.
Jon Bon Jovi also said he rolls up his sleeves and works in the restaurant himself, and he said, and again, he is not like you and I. Last Friday, I was at the White House serving on the Council for Community Solutions, got on a train, changed in the bathroom, and got here in time to wash dishes Friday night. I'm the dishwasher, for real. I can't cook a lick.
Awesome.
One of the common people he is. Yeah. All right, and with that, ladies and gentlefolk, we do this. We bring the curtain down on another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high over the milk packing district in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Kill, executive producer, Bruce Eichel, chief of staff, Cheryl Kanakoa. Thank you for joining us. We will see you next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. Today we'll have a Taser Watch, Nazi Watch, and also Mr. Mike Russell in the studio talking about Sabretooth Vampire Volume 2. Don't forget, you can get this program each and every day from iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at LegionOfNews.com. And take it with you on your mobile device if you like. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. We will see you tomorrow, Friday at noon, for another exciting installment of Legion of News. Until then, have a safe and satisfying Thursday, won't you?